When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No. No, man. No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the news, so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Hello, North Bay Station Jacks. I'm Tim Al. For the moment, we have our buddy Greg Pappas on the board. Matt Byrne will be here in a second. SP Futures unchanged. NASDAQ Futures up 21. Is there some kind of a song here? I mean, what a difference 12 hours makes. Because last night, everything was off to the races with the 45-day extension and the Congress. I'm going to say the Dow is up, just out of memory, 160. S&P is up 25. NASDAQ maybe up 120. And all of a sudden we're scraping the we're scraping the bottom of this a little bit. And I don't understand quite why we've turned here, but we've got some weirdo stuff going on around the world, but not crazy. We've got the let's take a look at the 10-year rate where that is. We got the 10-year rate up another 5 basis points, 4.62. So maybe on its way to 5, and it looks like the bund's up, so it's got gold way down, it's got all kinds of stuff going crazy here. So, Greg, why did we turn here, man? You're the guy who was up all night partying, watching the spoos.
Yeah, it doesn't look good.
No.
I mean, if you open up, what, 0.5% or so, and then you can't even hold it overnight. I think NASDAQ's still up, so you got that.
One out of three branches of government's working, and that ain't bad. Is that Jack Nicholson?
Yeah.
Well, he was 2 out of 3, I think.
Okay, so
we're 1 out of 3.
Here's the start.
Actually, we might have the Dow up here, but it's I don't see any.
Interesting that crude's up too.
Yeah, and when the dollar is up again, so the dollar is kind of screeching. It's a
people are paying for energy, or they want to, they want gas and crude. You know, that can't be terrible.
Well, it's yeah, you wonder if it's because the guys are Russian and the Saudis cut back. You know what I'm surprised at, but actually fairly happy at, is the difference. And I keep talking about this. We need a you're going to be our oil expert here, because you're the only thing we got as an expert. I'm stunned that oil is $91.53 and RBOB is $2.42. RBOB got up to $2.90 when oil was like $77. So I mean, it's a real I got gas yesterday, $3.67. There's places that are under $3.50 in the burbs.
$3.50.
Yeah, and I don't quite. We have what? There's a little more tax in the city. City's 92 cents, but in the suburbs still got to be what? 86, 87. So
it
how do you?
Depends on which one, right?
Yeah. What I mean, it's all in the county, but anyway. So that's so what do you we've got I don't.
Besides creeping the markets, we're also creeping the.
Yeah, I don't know. This whole, did you see that Senator Feinstein dies, right? So, at 90. Somehow she cast a vote the day before she died. I don't get how that all worked, but I guess I don't want to know. But now Governor Newsom has...
I think we know.
Yeah. Governor Newsom has appointed some lady to be the new senator, right?
Right.
Which, I don't have a problem
it's
so much.
His job, so at least he did his job.
But now he...
Promptly.
Evidently, since Dianne Feinstein wasn't running again, three people had already declared their candidacy. So he doesn't pick any of those people. He picks his black lady, LaFonsa Butler, and in there, and you know, she can run again. Nothing says she can't. So he told everybody that if he has to do somebody in the Senate, he's going to for sure appoint a black woman, which I have no problem with, as long as you just appoint the black woman and say she's the best around, which maybe she is. You don't say, I'm going to appoint a black woman, and by the way, out of the five black women that may be qualified, out of the 1,000 other people that may be qualified, or 10 or 15 or however many it is, the other 15 never had a chance. I don't see how you do that. That's not my America. I mean, no matter which way you're doing it, I have a problem with it. I don't know, Greg. I am not against anybody getting anywhere. I don't understand. Plus, she's led Emily's List, which works to elect Democratic women since 2021, and she became the first black woman to lead the organization.
Okay? Well, isn't that what they wanted to do with the Supreme Court too?
Well,
just had to be a black woman.
Evidently. Well, you know, I don't know.
It's their they get I
mean,
to
when,
do it.
So. But I mean, when Thurgood Marshall was put in, he was put in because he was brilliant.
Oh, well, maybe.
I mean, it wasn't because he just happened to be black. I mean, I don't get it. But get a load of this. She's currently lives in Maryland.
So oh, nice. Yeah.
but she owns a home in California and will switch her voter registration out to California, even though she's not going to move to California.
Oh.
I mean, what is this about? This is nuts.
It sounds like U.S. politics.
You have this. It wasn't always like this. There was some measure of honor and some measure of right and wrong.
I don't think so.
You and I were discussing this Friday night. You weren't alive back then.
I think it's always been the same.
No, it hasn't.
It's just
I don't remember anybody from Illinois ever being appointed that lived in Nevada and said, "Okay, by the way, I'll move there next week." I mean, that never happened.
I think Hillary was a. I don't know.
She moved to New York before she ran.
Yeah.
Right.
Was she a resident?
She moved to New York before she declared. She ran for the Senate. She wasn't appointed when she lived in Illinois and said, "Oh, by the way, we'll move out there." And this lady has no intention of ever moving. Just happens to have a house.
Well, I wouldn't move either if I was not elected and I just was filling a job. I mean, maybe she wants to now, but. If she's moving.
Well, I mean, who says she's not going to run?
Well, that why not? If you if you're handed the job, you might as well. That's
free
publicity.
By the way, she's the first LGBT, whatever they are, LGBT plus.
Okay.
So if that's your narrow. So what are we going to guys?
Increasing diversity.
My next senator is going to be a contrary dude of Greek descent who's had a history of the. Restaurant industry.
I don't know, something about Greeks bearing gifts.
Yeah,
probably not a great idea.
So that would be you. You know, you're the only. You know, you were Billy, one of the two.
are we non-residents or are we residents?
Oh, well, you know, you guys don't count because you're residents. We have to get somebody who lives in Wisconsin, but that's okay. He's got a condo in Chicago. He rents out. He'll just change his vote. He's not going to move there.
Vallis. Vallis was Palos Hills. He wasn't.
He had a place in Bridgeport.
Yeah, I mean, loosely.
Well,
loosely.
But at least he probably would have moved here, maybe.
You'd hope so, but.
Well, who wants to live in Chicago now?
I found out a friend's actually moving to Miami. I was kind of disappointed over the weekend.
Audrey, two more clients. One, I think, sold a house. She sold a house for somebody. Bought a house. Her people bought the house. I think they're in. She's gonna be on later. I think they're. In Shorewood, and I think one of the ladies might have worked for 911 or something. They just want to be out of here as far as they can. I mean, I was reading some article this weekend, and I get one, of course, from the one of the right wing journals. Actually, it wasn't one of the right wing journals.
Oh, Matt's here. Let me go get him.
All right.
Give me a second.
It wasn't one of the right wing journals. It was actually one of the Hispanic aldermen that went on a rampage about how. We're giving the city over to 12 and 13 and 14-year-olds that are running around carjacking cars and shooting people, and we don't seem to be able to deal with it. Instead of putting them in jail, their parents in jail, we're not doing anything about it. It's become part of the culture and it's somehow okay. I don't understand this. I don't understand how we're losing people in the city, the place. What was the story on the west side? The drive-by shot four people. One of them was 7 years old, right? I mean,
nine-year-old.
Nine-year-old. And then there was a stabbing two blocks from here. We're at 411 South Wells at 800, was it 800 Plymouth, right? A stabbing. Now, there's an argument.
I didn't see that one.
A stabbing. All these people are there. Two people get stabbed, both in critical condition. Nobody knows nothing. Really?
You're gonna rat out your... I don't know. It doesn't seem... Even if you find or know who, the fact that they might be getting out soon, I wouldn't say anything either.
Okay, but I'm saying that we have a city here that somehow this is a problem. We need to send a...
The worst thing was...
Hey, Matt,
you see that
send
guy?
Mike Murphy to Zoom link, please.
Sounds good.
Did you see the one guy who was on the highway who carjacked... Who was in the car and then carjacked another one, and there's video of it. He got out.
Why'd he get out?
It wasn't good enough.
For whatever reason, I think the state's attorney said, you're come back later. Come back to court in a little bit.
I don't know how...
But the best part was the video, because the guy actually had his cell phone out on the... Maybe we can post this link in the show notes. He was pretty famous when the person had the cell phone. He was recording the carjacked car right in front of him. And he was providing commentary.
Why is this okay?
It's not okay.
There's... People leaving the city in droves. People, especially people from the neighborhoods where this is the worst in. They don't seem to have. How did our leadership decide that the perpetrators have more rights than the people getting shot?
Oh, Illinois State Police say that charges have been filed against the hijacker. He has a lengthy criminal history, multiple pending felony cases, and on 10:14 a.m. on October 14th, he stopped on the Dan Ryan. And three people ran out of a car that was involved in an auto accident, and then they decided to carjack another person. Right there.
Well, you heard the one last few months ago where there was an accident. These people were on the side of the road. The guy stopped and robbed them all.
Yeah.
Somehow whatever you have to do to stop it, you got to stop it, because innocent people. First thing of a person in office is supposed to do. First job of a government is to protect their people. What's the matter with these guys? They don't get it.
I mean,
I've read enough history, Greg, about stuff that happened before you were alive or before I was alive. If this continues on like this, a lot of people are gonna be like this alderman are gonna be outraged. We're gonna elect somebody who his only promise is to make the streets safe. And he's going to be a guy with a little toothbrush mustache, because Hitler made the street safe, didn't he? Who's the Italian guy?
Mussolini.
He made the trains run on time, right? Mm-hmm. The place was so screwed up, and they came in and made it work, and people loved him for it. Then look what happened. I mean, this will not go on unless the whole city just decides to empty out and just leaves it to the hoodlums. Because I know just a lot of people on North Side.
There was, I think that some of the finance guys on Twitter, they were posting the daily recording of Shoot to Kill earlier, and there were a bunch of people in the comments section, doing the clapping emojis and such.
It was a big thing
this weekend.
I am the softest dude when it comes to putting people in jail and everything, but anybody shooting out of a car, I'd have the Rat Patrol out there with the machine gun on top of the Jeep. I really wouldn't. I mean,
this sounds kind of like the Mussolini thing.
Well, I mean, but this can't happen. One of my friends from college, his wife got shot in the rain. She was considered collateral damage because he was driving between two people shooting. They didn't even arrest the people. This is insanity. Whose culture
world.
Is this? I mean, it's not
that's
mine.
The world.
No, it's a world here in Chicago that some people seem to think is the culture. It's not our culture. It's not my culture. It's not American culture. It's not anybody's culture. Except people who don't take care of their kids. The kids run around 14 years old at 3 in the morning shooting people. That's not a culture you want to embrace, I don't think. because there's a lot of really good people in those neighborhoods.
Silly kids.
You know what? You didn't do that. I didn't do that. We had parents. They didn't run around making babies and heading off.
I didn't have any guns.
Neither did I. I still don't, even though I have a concealed carry permit. Well, I don't have a permit because I get my finger. I don't. Anyway, what's going on with the market? Is there a bottom here?
No, I think we're down now.
Silver's under $20.
I was reading about the Chinese property kind of. I don't even know what to call it. It's worse than a debacle. It's like, I'd say, maybe 20 times worse than it was here.
Yeah.
In that, they overbuilt so much that everybody in their population can have another house now. So, and some people say that not only everybody can have a second house, but they can have two houses extra. So, like, if you think about what happened with us, 2007, 2008?
Yeah.
Our inventory was maybe 5% over. You know, we didn't have that many. It's just the loans associated. They actually have the physical in that every person in China could have another apartment, or another person in China. I don't know how good the data was, but it seemed to be like from one to two extra places for their entire population. So if
but that's if they are allowed to move, Greg. The government has to let them move.
Well, there was
you can own something there. So they went, you know, full speed all buying stuff, and I don't know, you'd hope that you could move to your own place.
Whatever, every country that's become industrialized, one of the, you got to hate this class, University of Chicago was a two-quarter class. It was like the history of economic thought and development. And it was at a big table in a building that didn't have any air conditioning. The air was all breathed before, one of those old buildings. And you sat there, but we learned so much stuff. Every country has had some sort of a industrial revolution where you went from an agricultural economy to, you know, at least a mixed economy. We sure did here with the Great Migration from the South, basically up the IC to Chicago. All the sharecroppers and so forth came to Chicago and got into the factories and so forth. I mean, every country has sort of done that. Japan was probably the fastest. Their whole change from an agriculture to an industrial economy took, what, Mike, 1880 to 1912 or 15 or somewhere? It was like 30 years. Everybody else was like a lot longer. But China, we've had people here back in the day. PTI did a lot of agriculture work with the people from China. And we had people over here. And I think the people living in the rural areas, their plot of land was like an eighth of an acre. Just enough for chickens, a couple of cows, and they grew, you know, some vegetables. That was it, or half acre, some ridiculous. So the amount of people that were moving to the cities on a yearly basis, I'm going to say at the turn of the 20th century, from the 19th to the 20th, Chicago at 3 million people was one of the top biggest cities in the world, top 10 cities in the world, wasn't it, Mike? And now there's got to be 15, 20 cities in Chicago that, even if Chicago was still 3 million when it's not, which it isn't, in China would be bigger than here. I remember Mayor Daley telling me at the club, because I just talked to this guy, the head of China, I don't know if he was an ambassador or what he was, but they had like 10 cities of 4 and 5 million people or over, and it's got to be way more than that now. So all these people...
Yeah, I think they're at 100 cities of a million or over, but I may be...
Yeah, and they've got 20 Chicagos there.
Yeah, and I'm saying, but all these people just were coming from these rural areas that were incredibly populated. We're not talking Iowa. You know, you drive down I-80 and you see a house every mile or two, and it's nothing but cornfields. Evidently, these places were just mobbed with people along every river, everything. So everybody was moving to the city as fast as they possibly could. Get on the train, never come back. Matter of fact, the ladies who were here, they worked for the government. The one lady said we had a seven-hour train ride from wherever I lived to Beijing. Got a job with the government. Now she's had like four or five promotions, and she's never going back. I don't know if she went back to see her family once. Why did that all stop? I mean, because obviously they kept building these cities in anticipation of this continuing on. I mean, did they just overbuild because people were getting loans thinking they could pay them? Because there's places, some of the cities are owned by people, right? And yet you can't even go live in your place?
Well, some of them, some of the properties don't meet the standards and aren't livable. So not only are they you know, the ghost that nobody else is there because there's not the people, but not they're not even to standard.
Well, who here knows?
To code. I guess G was actually pretty stringent about some of it, and it came after they had already started building, so there was a lot of problems related to construction.
Okay. What I mean, I try and find out because they the Chinese government stopped letting a lot of these guys borrow through the system overseas, meaning U.S. Euro or wherever else you're going, and that's when they started this direct dollar and euro denominated debt, right? Where they just people lent them money straight in dollars without going through the governmental process and changing it into the Chinese currency and doing that. So it was just a direct dollar loan.
Impossible once it's in there, you know, all the rules associated with capital leaving.
Right.
It's you can maybe buy your house, but your savings and such, the government's spending it.
Well, one of my kind of frustrations in terms of finding information, and Carl didn't seem to be able to find it, neither does Dan Janitas, I can't figure out who the hell here is up to their nose in Chinese debt. My suspicion is that BlackRock's got some of it, because they're always telling other people to buy over there. I think it's buy their stuff, but I don't know that for sure. But I there's got to be people here hanging on this stuff when these guys don't pay these interest payments. And I don't know how you find out who it is. Well,
I would imagine if you're speculating in Chinese debt markets that you've got more than enough money. It's not really going to... Yeah, I think you can afford to lose it. Does anyone really trust what's coming out of there?
Well, no, what I'm saying is there were people, and this is maybe before Greg's time, in 2007 and so forth, in 2008, when people were buying the mortgage debt. I don't know if you were still in the Army doing real stuff, Mike, but there were people that you never even dreamed were involved in this stuff. I mean, Dr. Jay and I did some lecturing over in Europe for a while.
I was an intern at Merrill Lynch. That was interesting.
Oh, yeah.
That was still a company.
There were all these German banks, and I knew the names of some of them because we lectured a couple of them. But one of the banks that got hurt the most and went under was some mid-level German bank that, you know, I never heard of. You never really know who piles this stuff up. You know, who would have known that, you know, Silicon Valley was in that kind of trouble? I mean, there's supposed to be people watching this, but I don't know if I trust our watchers all that much, but I don't know if you could ask the Fed.
Well, the watchers are the ones trading against us.
Yeah, well, I mean, could you ask the Fed tomorrow who they should have been able to tell you in 2007, 2008.
Do I ask Congress? They'll know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They have probably invested in some of those properties.
Well, that could be.
Nah, they don't lose money. They sold a long time ago.
They sold a long time ago. but you wonder who exactly are. I mean, you know, what are we going to find out someday that, you know, some 10 big groups here? Because it's not like, and that's another question is, when you talk about these buildings downtown in Chicago, again, it's not about the buildings. It's about Jan Flanagan tells us, and he'll be on in a minute. He tells us that it's not like, you know, 175 West Jackson was the mortgage was at Continental Bank or First National Bank or someplace. It's this consortium of these private equity funds, and they're not. I don't want them to be necessarily regulated by the Fed because I don't think they do a very good job. But the question is, if one of those guys is in deep, deep trouble, who knows about it? I mean, you would think that in 2007, when the money was coming from Japan, when you ask yourself, the interest rates were like 6.5%, which is actually a little less than they are now. But the money was pouring into them. And back in the day, I kept saying to myself, who feels so incredibly bullish about this money that they would want to invest? Well, it turns out people were borrowing in Japan at 2% or 1.5% and coming over here. Even we could make money if we all put like 100 grand a piece in, borrowed like 20 million at 2%, and put it to work at 6.5%. Even we could do something with that.
The carry trade.
Yeah, the problem is that you leave one piece out, going back to get your yen back, right? Right, Greg?
Currency might move.
Yeah, the currency might move.
But more than that 4%.
Right, but nobody cared about that.
Oops.
Yeah, so you left one leg open, but the money was pulling.
You could hedge.
But I mean,
in theory, you could have options.
All right, but if you hedged, you didn't make any money.
Right. But you could hedge a portion, you know.
Yeah, okay, but I'm saying
if that goes wild, then at least you're covered. Because
but the point being is that the only people that could know that, I mean, you and I and Mike as investors, we couldn't know that. The only people that could know that would be the Fed. And they blew it. They didn't stop it. They didn't, I'm saying the only people who would actually know who's in hack to this stuff in China might be the Fed. But if it's people like BlackRock, they don't regulate them. I'm not lobbying that they should, but I don't know if anybody knows who's in trouble. I guess my point. And I don't. And who was the one? Mike, was it your guy? Was it Secretary of Defense? We don't know. Was that him? Was that Rumsfeld?
Yeah, that was Rumsfeld, Tom.
We don't know what we don't know. Now, there's a statement.
I like that statement.
Yeah, SP Futures up 75 cents, Nasdaq Futures up 27. We're back. We're going to add Mr. John Flanagan to the mix. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right now.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. Somehow, we got Matt Byrne on the board. SP Futures up 2, Nasdaq Futures up 32. We're actually back up a little bit here after being mixed and down a little bit after being way up last night. Really, really strange stuff. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 2. Let's call that one flat. FTSE down 12.2%. CAC down 2. Let's call that one flat. So European markets lose early gains. Eurozone manufacturing slump continues. So there you go. On Friday, Dow was down 158. S&P down 11. NASDAQ was actually up 18, so kind of mixed it down a little bit on Friday, but crummy week. In Asia, Nikkei down 97.3%, Hang Seng. Let's see, these guys, did they did not trade. Wait a minute, they did not trade today. Neither did Shanghai, has not traded since last. Is there some kind of holiday over there, Greg? I don't know what's going on over there. Shanghai has not traded since Thursday. Hang Seng did not trade today.
Yes, there is a holiday in China, Tom. I forget which one it is.
10-year Treasury up 6 basis points, 6.23. Treasury yield rises as investors weigh interest rate outlook. The Bund up 3 basis points, 286. Japan unchanged, 0.77. We've got oil up 84 cents, 91.63. Brent up 94 cents, 93.14. Natural gas down 2 cents, 290. Arbob up 2 cents, 242. Got gold, whack, whack, whack. Down 15 bucks, 18.50. So it's down like 100 and some bucks in the last 2 weeks. Silver down 59 cents, 21.85. Remember, well, the last few times it's got to 21.50. It's been a huge buy. It doesn't mean this time, though, because the dollar just getting clobbered. I mean, no, the dollar's not getting clobbered. Everything else is getting clobbered. The dollar's running up. Copper down 3 cents, 3.69. We've got Bitcoin up 1,200 bucks, 28,321. That's a huge move there. And we have the U.S. dollar up again, not much, but just up, with the pound's 105 now. I'm sorry, the bond's 121 and the euro's 105, so that's as low as we've seen it really in months. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Yeah, good morning. Currently 6:41 a.m. on October 2nd, 2023. The weather in Chicago, currently 62 degrees, a high of 84 today. Clear skies are expected. Tomorrow, lots of sun, high of 85. Should feel like summer today and tomorrow, so look forward to that. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, clear skies, 67 degrees currently, a high of 86. Sunny skies expected throughout the week. In the MLB yesterday, Cubs lost to Milwaukee 4-0, and White Sox lost as well 2-1 against San Diego. Of course, yesterday in the NFL, Bears took an embarrassing loss to the Denver Broncos. Bears held out with 28-14 by the end of the third quarter, but gave away 17 points in the fourth. Final score 31-28, marking their fourth loss this season and their 14th game in a row, including last season. That's all for now, Chief. Back to you.
You see, Matt, you're not in tune with the Bear fans.
Am I not? Yeah.
We're still.
There's still hope. Yeah.
No, we're good to go for the number one draft pick.
I see. Yeah.
Then all will be well.
It's okay to be a loser because. Next time you get to go first.
Well, you get to pick first. Sure.
I guess so.
Yeah.
There was a tank for Tua campaign before.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That worked out for them.
Oh yeah.
Every year we'll be first to pick.
We trade that down for a couple picks for the year after.
Yeah.
And then so now we never actually get. Last year they traded all the picks, so they've got somebody else's number one this year too, right? Carolina, so they could have like the number one and four pick.
Wow.
But don't screw them up though. It's not like it's. They have two picks and they need 25 players.
Mm.
How does that math there doesn't work out so much?
No.
What did you guys think of the Cubs? We have Mr. Flanagan.
We do indeed.
Good morning, Tom. Mike.
Good morning,
John.
Did you see that the? I was reading a little bit of an analysis, and of course I'm probably wrong, but in the last 25 games they were like 9-16 or something, which torpedoed their season. But the weird part of it was, I'm not sure that was the number. It was something like that. They actually outscored their opponents 89-82. Now, I think if you watch baseball and played it enough, that immediately the red light starts popping out of the article at you. Mike will probably understand this. What do you think happened, Mike?
I guess the pitching went downhill, as did the relievers.
They lost their closer to injury.
Right.
It'll do it, right?
Yeah, sure will.
They lost five games in the last 2 weeks after leading in like the eighth inning or something, which is, I don't think they did that the whole rest of the year. But when you lose your best starter and your reliever in the last 8 weeks, you got trouble. Because no team is that deep.
The Braves might be.
I don't know. I know.
The Braves are deep, as are the Dodgers.
But is there pitching that? They can outscore you. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
No, I think the Braves have decent pitching. They have Strider, and they've got two or three good starters.
You know,
but I can't remember them right now.
Well, everybody says, well, okay, what's the difference? Why can't some other guy close? It's sort of not like that. This Mike is being a softball pitcher. You've got your closer. Okay, he's the ninth inning. You're supposed to be your guy that you can't ruffle. Then your eighth inning guy is almost the same. Then your seventh inning guy is almost the same. Not that they go every day. There's a few other people in there. But if you lose the ninth guy, now your eighth guy becomes the ninth guy, right? Your seventh guy becomes the eighth guy. Usually the one or two people that now you have to inject in are now like your eighth or ninth best pitchers, right? I mean, you're really sort of down the chain there. Is that correct? So you're actually just...
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, that when the Nats were successful, they had three good relievers. And then when they... Actually, one of them ended up getting hurt, but they still won the World Series because the eighth inning guy was strong enough to replace the ninth inning guy.
And they had somebody else to replace him.
Right, but as you said, it became a weaker rotation or a weaker closing rotation, and they were struggling a little bit, but they managed to do okay.
One of the guys who was the head of marketing at the Seaboats a long time ago, he says to me, Tom, you got to explain to me, I'm not big on baseball. What exactly is a middle relief guy? His name was John Roberts, real nice guy. And I go, John, well, you got five starters. They're like your best pitchers. And you've got a closer, maybe an eighth inning guy. So now you're up to six or seven. They're the other three guys that aren't good enough to be either one of the other two things. That's pretty much it, right?
Yep. The middle relievers sometimes get thrown into the games that they know they're going to lose too.
Yeah. Well, it's. But I mean, the Cubs made a big step forward. They're a couple people away.
When the White Sox went to the World Series, I think what they brought. In that one long game, they brought Burley back in to pitch after,
yeah.
And he was drinking beers in the bullpen, and they brought him back in.
Well, you know, didn't they? Remember when the Cubs was it 89? The guy who just died, Shooter. They brought him back on like what, one day's rest or something, and he's throwing like
Shooter. You mean Bruce Shooter?
No, Shooter. What the hell is his name? He was the guy. Had the beard. Everybody loved the dude. He died real young. He died at like 38 or something. We'll have Matt look that up. What the hell was his name? Beckman? Or everybody loved the guy. And he said he was out of baseball not very long and died of some wacko disease. And but he came back. So did the lefty pitcher. Was it Mulholland? He came back on like one day's rest and gave
Terry Mulholland.
Yeah, he gave him an inning the next night or something, Mike. I mean, it's a he didn't have much, but guile, you know. But
well, they did that once again. The Nats did that with Patrick Corbin during the World Series. You know, he was at the time he was an ineffective starter, but he was a great reliever for the two or three innings or one inning that they needed him. And Shooter did very well in that role.
The Shooter was Rob Beck. Remember him?
No, I do not remember.
He was on a bunch of teams, but he came to the Cubs and he had a bunch of saves in 1 year. He was the closer.
Oh, I remember him.
Yeah. He was a big barrel-chested right-handed guy with a beard or mustache, whatever the hell he had. He was a character. He was a serious character. Everybody loved him. But, John, are you coaching the gentleman in Congress that pulled the fire alarm? That's not how you open the door?
I just think people should give him the benefit of the doubt, Tom. He probably can't read. He doesn't know what FIRE
is. Oh, John, come on.
I'm trying to be nice, Mike.
Well, my wife, Jean, said that, that's middle school stuff. Because I first said it was grade school stuff, but she said, no, that's middle school stuff.
I got to believe, you know, and it's not just, you know, we walk to school against the wind uphill both ways. I have to believe every first grader, maybe even a kindergartner at St. John Fisher, knew that that was a fire alarm and you weren't supposed to touch it. I know I did from every. I can't ever think of being young enough to not know that was a fire alarm.
Well, Tom, you were probably one of the only ones tall enough to reach the fire alarm.
Well, that could be true as well, but still, it was.
Be interesting if it's red.
It's got to be.
I don't know.
Well, and they have. Film or video of the guy pulling the alarm. So, I mean, this, and he's one of the more obnoxious guys from New York City. So he's a
wait a minute. That says a lot. Being the most obnoxious guy from New York City.
Well, the video also shows him knocking down the signs that were in front of the door, just around the corner from this alarm. It said emergency exit only. He pushes the signs down like he's intending to go out those doors, and just instead of like picking up the sign, outside. This is what sort of a thinking person might do, to just push it down and then go pull the fire alarm and then run off. The guy ran off and didn't use the door that he was supposedly interested in getting out of. The whole thing is just a sign of somebody totally out of control.
But I mean, the Democrats
must know it's on video too. Security cameras all over this place.
But the Democrats all voted for the bill except for Mike Quigley. So I don't get what the why would he.
Well, they were stalling in order to try and get Ukraine funding in there. They were pushing for Ukraine funding, and unfortunately, that didn't happen.
You think they're getting another bill to do that, Mike?
Yes, they're talking about doing something this week, but they've got to handle the vacate the speaker motion first.
Where do you guys come down, and we'll let Jen talk first on this. Where do you guys come down? I mean, we were having this discussion with my brothers yesterday, and Dan was saying, you know, they know what they've passed. Why every time this debt ceiling thing comes up, why do we go through this shenanigans and go through the incredible BS of we're not going to pay the military? Okay, they might miss a check, but then they're going to get two checks. I mean, everybody all ends up getting paid. I mean, the military doesn't get a time off, but other people do. Matter of fact, I was in the Myers, and the guy... I go to the same checkout guy every week. Can you imagine that, guys? Me going to the same spot all the time. And I talked to the guy, and he's forever looking for a job. He's this older guy, and he's a cashier at the Myers. Decent enough dude, but he doesn't want to be on his feet all day because the guy's, you know, I think he's on Social Security. So he's looking for Secretary of State. Well, anyway, there's a job opening at Social Security in the mail room where all you'd have to do is sort mail. And the guy's very competent, nice, and he goes they. All of a sudden, they were going to stop all hiring for the freeze. And I go, why are they going to do that? Because the guys that are doing the hiring are going to get laid off. They're going to get laid off, but then they're going to get paid for being laid off. I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, and then you got the president and people running out. Not just him. They did it under, wasn't there one of these things when Trump was in office? He did the same thing. Soldiers aren't going to get paid. This isn't going to get paid. People aren't going to get their shots if they're dead. I mean, come on, guys. I mean, really? Anyway, saying to my bro, I said, you know, Dan, one of the issues I think, and I sympathize with the people that are doing this from the right as much as I don't usually do that, is that these bills that people are asked to pass and do pass go through the Congressional Budget Office and they say, here's what the impact is going to be of this bill. And you know what? It's all BS. And then all of a sudden, you know, if you look at all the bills, I'll bet if you actually went back and could do this, if you total all the bills up, you would say we should be at $30 trillion deficit. And by the way, we're at 33. So the bills are all BS, or the estimates are all BS. And we were running ahead of any estimate. So I could see where somebody at the debt limit saying, hey, guys, we're supposed to be at 30 and we're at 33. I'm not voting for any more unless we figure out where it's coming from and how do we fix it. I could see that, even though I did maybe vote for the bills based on the estimates somebody gave me. I don't know if I want to shut the government down for that, but somewhere along the line, you got to look in the mirror and say, where are we? I mean, that's where I am, John. Where are you on this?
Well, nobody wants to admit the truth that we're broke. And when you're broke and you've got more and more, you know, expenses that you've come up with since the last shutdown, all you can do is borrow it or rent it, and it isn't like any of this stuff is going to, you know, make any more, you know, intelligent decision making possible down the road. Because by the next time this, you know, comes around in November, there, who knows what's going to happen between now and November that's going to cause us to, you know, be in even worse shape then, or the next government shutdown. There'll be, you know, however many more hurricanes or disasters or earthquakes or wars or whatever that we can't afford. We're just up against the wall about it, and nobody has any interest in ratcheting back spending. It's quite the opposite. It doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. So I see it as just a continuing madness, and we're denying the fact that we're bankrupt and, you know, expecting somehow this to continue. But you know what it's going to end up looking like, and nobody wants to even think about that. We pretend it's going to be otherwise.
Mike, should we accuse our grandpa here of being a grandpa? Doesn't he understand that in today's world, as long as you can continue to borrow, you're not broke?
Yeah. Well, Tom, John makes an extremely good point. neither party is willing to make the cuts necessary to run the government officially. So they just keep on spending money. It's not their money, it's our money, and then we're going to be the ones that have to pay the taxes later to bail out the government.
Well, you
and
get,
who knows whether we'll ever be able to do that.
So you guys are, Greg, these dudes are getting old right in front of my face. You're missing the new fiscal policy. The new fiscal policy is...
Yeah, just keep printing money, and that isn't working.
No, we got dealt the curve with the COVID. Otherwise, we wouldn't be. But the new fiscal policy...
Oh, but we kept printing money.
I'm with you, but I'm just saying the fiscal policy is that if we can grow our national debt by 3%, and we can grow our economy by 3.0001%, by the time the year 35-35 comes around, we'll be okay. As long as the economy is growing slightly faster than the debt load, they don't even think like maybe the three of us do. And I'm going to say I don't because I'm younger than you guys. they don't even think about paying anything back. That's off the table. As long as this may sound sexist, but it could go either way. As long as your salary goes up 5% a year, Mike, the wife can spend 4% more a year on credit cards. That's the same. Eventually, you will catch it. Now, the problem comes...
The problem is, Tom, the salaries aren't going up.
That's true.
And now the debt is going up because interest rates have increased.
Well, plus you get a little shock like the Ukraine war, a little shock like COVID, and all of a sudden it kind of knocks you off the path. But the mentality is still there. We're going to catch up, and by next year, our growth is going to be 3%, and our growth in debt is going to be 2.5%, and give us 20 years, and we'll be fine. I'm just saying what the mentality is, because you and I and John all think this is crazy. They don't. They think as long as one grows...
Well, if you ask Stephanie Kelton and Paul Krugman, that means that we owe ourselves debt, so it doesn't...
Right.
It doesn't matter. Because
that's a Nobel Prize winner there.
It's real money into the economy.
You know who asked that exact same question? Some guy like Greg, some kind of lurker dude in the crowd, asked that question of Milton Friedman. And he said the exact same thing. He said it doesn't matter because the people in the U.S. are owed money by the U.S., which is essentially them. But I don't think Uncle Milty, I mean, a lot of stuff he said made huge sense at the time. Okay? It doesn't now. Because I don't think he would have anticipated that 50% of our government debt was held by people outside the country. If you'd have told him that, I think his answer would have been different. What do you guys think? I think it would have been
different. Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, if he would have said, by the way, the Chinese and the Saudis are going to have all this debt, I think he might have said
well,
something
Well, the Fed's
different.
The Fed's long. They're buying their own stuff.
Well, they're buying their own stuff, but it's the two-step. You know, the federal government throws the bond out there, and the Fed goes and buys it, which created money.
It's the modern monetary theory.
Is that lady still on the Council of Economic Advisors who wrote that incredibly horrible book?
I don't know, probably. I ordered the book. It never came.
Did you pay for it?
I think so.
Maybe it was so popular, maybe somebody stole it off
your porch.
I think
it might have, maybe it sold out and they sent me the money back.
I think it was on your porch and somebody ran up and got it because it was so popular.
I was going to use it as a door.
You guys, I think you know I'm right that is the theory. Problem is, when you're that close, you just keep it knocked off. It's sort of, I mean, but families do the same thing. I mean, and I read, or I should have sent it to you guys. It was a few years ago.
No, families don't do the same thing, Tom.
Sure they do.
Oh,
Families get
whacked
perhaps, by credit card
but
bill,
then
so.
They end up declaring bankruptcy, you know, okay. Like the elusive ex-president has done how many times. So I have to balance a budget. We have to balance a budget. The government should have to balance a budget.
But I'm saying a lot of people live hand to mouth. I know a lot of people because the people on the trading floor I knew are all out of a job for 20 years, so they, you know, their lifestyle was different than it is now, than their income now. But there's a lot of people. If you ask Jen, when did we go through this? 6 months ago, that the average American cannot If something happens, $1,500, they don't have the cash for it. They have the credit. Right.
It's like $500, $400. I couldn't believe how low the number was, and that they don't have that money on hand or in anything liquid that they can afford to pull on to pay for a small emergency expense. So
I mean, some of the statistics, Mike. We haven't gone through them for a while because we have so much other stuff to talk about. But a real high percentage of individual bankruptcies are people have the credit cards, they're managing their balances, they've got their mortgage, they got the car payment, they might have the boat payment, who the hell knows, people buy boats anymore. And all of a sudden there's an emergency room type thing that costs $10,000, which should cost two, but it costs 10. And all of a sudden their insurance doesn't cover it, and now they've blown through their credit cards, and that's a real high percentage of
that
personal bankruptcies.
It starts a spiral.
Yeah. Are caused by an unexpected medical event, and it's because people are on the edge. I mean, when you and I grew up, our parents, I don't know what your parents made or mine, but I mean, basically the blue collar workers of the day made $100 a week and lived on 90 or 85 and put the other 10 or 15 in a bank. I mean, I don't think anybody can do that anymore. And the weird part is the people in a $200,000+ bracket that live in the burbs, that can't really can't get on the bus, basically, that need the two cars, in percentage terms, I think are hurting just as much as the people that are making 60. I think everybody's strained. Just because you make more doesn't mean you got the car payments, you got all the stuff, you might have the
lifestyle creep.
Well, all you have to do is get yourself, I don't have them, but I tell you what, I'm not so sure I want to own a dog now. I mean, I've heard stories of dogs, eating a sock or something, and you need a operation. It's like $11,000. That's serious cash.
All right, Tom, I gotta go. Thanks for the conversation.
Get a load of this.
Needless to say, I disagree with modern. Monetary theory.
So do I. But they're holding the dais now, not us. How are they doing with that?
You'll come around, Mike.
Yeah, well, it'll come around our way again. You think? We'll see. S&P futures down 8 and NASDAQ futures down 280. Very short break here, and we'll be right back.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Big John. Big John.
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6'6" and weighed 245. Kind of broad.
Hello. Go back to Stocks and Jacks. Great song. SP futures down 975. NASDAQ futures down 6. Every time you go in a grocery store, you still see that guy's name, right, Matt?
Who's that now? Big John?
Not Big John. Jimmy Dean, Pork Sausage.
Oh, of course, yeah.
He got into the pork. He had a TV show, variety show.
Yeah, I will say that the sausage legacy has outlasted the TV show legacy to a degree.
The guy's been dead for 20 years.
Yeah, but it is still good. Oh, gosh.
Oh, I looked it up over the break. Rod Beck was...
Shooter.
Yeah, Shooter was... He died of a drug overdose, unfortunately.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, it's a... Pretty scary stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, the, I don't know. So, Jan, what we were talking before you piped in here, we also said we were going to ask you, how can you figure out, we're talking about the Chinese debt, and the guys declared bankruptcy again last week, didn't they? Or what happened? The stock stopped trading again, right? It opened up at like 60 cents, went to like $1.10, and now it stopped trading again, right, Greg?
And they arrested the directors.
They had arrested the directors. The other place, somehow, they made their payment a month ago. I haven't heard about anything from them. I keep forgetting the name of the place. It looks
Country Gardens.
Yeah, it sounds like a nursing home. anyway, how can you figure out, John, even with the, if you cared, if you wanted to find out who the mortgage holders are of, like, 175 West Jackson or the Board of Trade building or everything, it's not as simple as saying, "Well, that's Continental Bank, that's First Name." How can you figure out who the people? I mean, if you're looking for the next domino, I won't say to fall, but it's at risk. How do you even find out? I mean, who owns the Chinese debt? Who owns? What if somebody had 15 buildings like 175 West Jackson?
Essentially what the Chinese government did.
Yes.
They just took everybody's savings, they dumped it all into these property deals. And then I guess the debt, they laid it off on either the people and or some other businesses there. And now we've got a $300 billion problem.
How does the average Chinese person making $2 an hour get any savings?
Well, they had enough savings to buy these other places. And that's what the only way legally they could, you know, put money away.
They must have a 90% mortgage or something in these places. Those guys didn't have much. I can't imagine them all having a lot of big down payment. Do you, Jen?
Well, in China, I don't think you can get a mortgage without at least 40% down.
Really?
On your first house. And what's worse, Tom, is that, you know, you're paying. You know, you close on a deal, but the building maybe doesn't even have a foundation dug yet, and you're already making payments for something that has yet to be enclosed as dwelling space. And you can imagine how people would go for that in this country. You know, we're going to close on it at least maybe when the thing is under roof, or when we know it's going to be completed within weeks, and we can get a punch list of items that need to be finished before we do a walkthrough. But I'm not going to start paying until I can at least have a walkthrough in the place. And these people are just dealing with virtual space, and they're 40% down. And, you know, can you imagine what that does to the average Chinese person, no matter how prosperous you are or how much you save, and then for the thing to go belly up.
Jen, what's the process here? There's a place right by Audrey. I don't think the people near it were too happy last summer. This summer, when they were, it was essentially a big cornfield left on Wolf Road, and somebody finally bought it. And there was a pond down there which the geese loved. I know the geese are out of a house, but it's got to be, I don't know, 3-4 blocks by 3-4 blocks. So it's a half a mile square maybe, and. These guys were, you know, they started and put in the roads, and it's pretty fascinating to watch, actually. First you put in the driveways and the roads and the sewers, and all of a sudden you start building places, and they have, I guess, a few standalone homes. The rest are townhomes. I don't know if there's a building with condos in it, but anyway, people are all, you know, I guess the houses and stuff are all essentially sold out. Now, here, what does that mean? You put down a deposit, but the guy's got to do stuff, right? I mean, you don't close on a thing until it's all done in a walkthrough and a whole bit, right? Take me through the process. I don't know how.
Yeah, I mean, you go in if you have a model home situation or whatever, and you see here are the types of buildings available to you, and you designate the lot that you want, depending on whether it's, you know, on this street or that street or whatever. And you got a whole big grid with the plan of subdivision looks like. You put, you know, your finger on lot one and block two or whatever, and then you put down money to hold that lot, so that, you know, it's just like, you know, but it's vacant land at this point.
Is it 5%, 10%?
Yeah, it just as a way of getting, you know, yourself as a placeholder there, and then there will be you know, a construction contract where you're, this is the house that you contracted to buy, and here's the price, and depending on how the financing is arranged, if you got the builder doing it or somebody on the outside that is going to take your loan application or whatever, but you're not going to close on it, you're not going to be, you know, responsible for repayment until the thing's done. So, well, in the meantime, you know, the lender is using money from other house, you know, purchases or other developments they have to fund the construction of this thing, but they're not going to be able to close out the deal until it's, you know, you've had a walkthrough and it passes inspection and architect certification, and all the many liens have been paid off on it in connection with the construction. So it's a clean deal when you get in there and the buyer. In the meantime, I mean, you're out some money because you've got the lot tied up. But it isn't like, you know, it's money you can probably get back, or at least a portion of it, if the thing goes sour or you have second thoughts about it. But it isn't like you're closed out on something and you're responsible for it and the taxes and everything else when the building hasn't even been constructed.
Well, if you, as an attorney, or me, I've done this a few times, you're an expert witness, somebody gives you, you know, say they give you a $20,000 retainer or something, or 10 or whatever. I mean, I would always take that money and get a separate account and put it in there.
Right.
And then if I, whatever hours I did, I'd send them essentially a bill and they would okay it and say that it was like $500 for the month. I would withdraw $500 from, but that was always like an escrow thing.
Money that it wasn't, you know,
wasn't mine yet. Account. I mean, it wasn't mine yet. It wasn't mine until I actually billed them for it. Now, this money, when you give a builder, is this escrowed, or do you buy the lot outright, and then the rest of it? I can't imagine that happening, because if the guy screws up the whole project,
you don't buy the lot outright. No,
is it handled like an escrow for an attorney or an expert witness, or is that, can he use that money to build with?
He can use that money to build on it. This, I don't think there's any attempt to conceal that. This is the cash flow that they need. Of course, they're making house sales elsewhere, and maybe even in this project too, where somebody's buying, so they're getting, you know, full payment from some buyer for a completed property. And, you know, if this is selling well and people are anxious to buy in this place, that, you know, they speed up construction, they'll do whatever they have to make sure that they can get, you know, full sales in their books, and this lets them go out and invest in other property for development.
But if this whole thing blows up, you could lose your deposit.
Yeah.
We're like, if I get run over by a bus, these guys would get the rest of their escrow back that they sent me. Or you,
right,
if you're an attorney.
I mean, it's similar and maybe even more, even riskier in a condo situation. So, if, you know, if you've got a condo conversion or a new building, and you've got a building that's, you know, substantially complete, but you don't have any sales of units in it yet, and somebody walks in, I want the, you know, unit so-and-so, and they buy it, and maybe the building is functioning, it's got water, it's got utilities, you know, it's got windows and everything else, but if you turn out to be the only, you know, buyer, and the market dries up, and you live in a six-unit building, and you are the only occupant, that's a pretty scary feeling, because if those units don't sell, and they don't sell in a timely way, you're stuck there with the entire burden of the building, all the common elements. How does the grass get mowed? You know, if the builder is in trouble and they don't have, you know, the resources to do this, and you're living in this place and making your mortgage payments and everything else, but to say nothing of the fact that your investment is being wiped out because nobody wants to buy in this building, apparently, you've got pretty lonely life, and you're stuck with, you know, making the thing look halfway decent if the builder has already moved on. And those people can lose everything practically. Those are scarier things even than buying the subdivision, I think.
Well, a friend of mine, old girlfriend, worked at Pullman together with her. I think their building was 400 East Ohio, one of those over there in Streeterville. And you could tell when you went in the apartment that it was not designed to be a rental. I mean, all the stuff was really nice. You couldn't hear anybody next door. I mean, Well, that thing, I don't know what year this was, John, but they went condo, or they built it as condominiums. I think they sold the two penthouses. The rates went sky high, and they just said, screw it, and rented the place for, I'm going to say, at least a decade, maybe more. And they were able to fill it up with renters, and I think somehow got by the skin of their teeth, and then pumped it out as a condo building, you know, 15 years later. And I guess everybody had to wait a while for their money, but I think they managed to stay above water. I'm not positive they did, but I think they did. So what happens to the two people in the penthouse? They got two votes or what? They just sit there? I don't think they got hurt. I don't think they got hurt.
Something similar happened in, you know, as six unit new condo building was built, you know, a couple blocks from me here on Pulaski. Nice new building with six units, balconies and everything. Shortly after the building was completely sold, there was a fire in one of the units, and a fire damaged two of the other apartments. So three apartments total, you know, were damaged and had to be, you know, evacuated and boarded up and everything else. And now there are, you know, three for sale signs in that six-unit building. Three of the apartments are occupied by owners. The other three, whatever happened to the people who were living there, if they, you know, they sold it back to the developer, or they sold it back to the bank. But now you've got three apartments that are functioning with paying assessments and everything else, and three that may not be. So imagine what that does to your cash flow if you're carrying the load for three uninhabitable.
I think it's a big deal if it's one.
Uninhabitable unit.
It's a big deal if it's one person.
Of course. And the smaller the building, the bigger the impact for just one apartment. Of course, you've got a two-unit or three-unit condo, and one of them is in the toilet.
Well, plus, if one of the people goes sour, because this happened to Robin's place on Kenmore, and she was, of course, the treasurer of the condo association, the guy lived right behind her. Of course, he was one of your outfit. He was an attorney, and he was doing fine. He had all his dough. He had a big van. All of a sudden, he decided he liked drugs better than trying cases, and had to sell the van. All these people were coming in the middle of the night. He's, like, dealing out of there. They tried to get him out of there. They couldn't get him out of there. They finally took him to court, and he went in and stole the whole court file because he was an attorney. Meanwhile, you're taking the garbage out, and there's the guy. His buddy's doing drugs. I mean, this is in a real nice neighborhood.
I
mean,
it was. I laugh. It's not funny. Though.
No, I mean, it was brutal. Yeah. Jan, we talk, I think, sometimes too much about Chicago. We get Greg involved in this, is it? But these are all economic issues. And when you look at your population that, you know, is supposed to be buying stocks, stocks are supposed to be going up. They were up last night, now they're not, which is kind of weird. When people keep getting more and more in debt, what happens when some city that's a vibrant source of taxation all of a sudden is it? I hope the listeners know that nobody loves a city more than I love Chicago. I mean, I didn't go when I was at Pullman. They wanted to transfer me somewhere else. I said, I'm not going anywhere. My family here is, my friends are here, my softball's here. Good luck. I'm not going anywhere. And kind of screwed up the whole system there they had for a while, but they liked me, so they let me stay. I don't know how much further we can go here, Jan, before it becomes non-recoverable. I mean, you look at, you know, New York in the early 70s, where Times Square was, you know, a million porn stores and strip joints and stuff, and, you know, the movies are Escape from New York and all those kinds of, you know, cities can come back from really horrible situations. You know, even Harlem and the Bronx, all those places are now, even Brooklyn are now vibrant, and they were, you know, pretty much hellholes for a while. You can go someplace, you know, you can go down a rat hole and come back up some, but I don't know that Chicago being much more blue-collar than New York, I mean, I question how much further down we can go without having a problem. I don't. I mean, how do you reverse the? I mean, the people who are leaving the city are mostly African American. These are all good people. The ones that can leave are leaving. How do you reverse that flow to the point where maybe we'll get some industry back or something, and we actually need people to work? How do you turn that bus around to where all of a sudden it's okay to get on the L, it's okay to have your kids take the bus to school, it's okay to do this kind of thing? I mean, how do you, even if you tried to turn the crime rate around, I don't know if it's a 5-year project, what do we look like in 5 years? If it's a 10-year project, what do we look like then? And what does that mean in the foreclosures? What is it going to cost money-wise? I mean, how do you keep your rails and subways and bus lines up with 50% of the people riding them? I wouldn't want to be the guy to try and choreograph that back. As much as I think I have some talent in that area, I think that would be a job way too big for me and anybody I know. I mean,
I have to use Chicago as my, you know, field of vision because I live here and we have deep roots in the place. But I saw something the other day and I can't tell you chapter and verse where it came from, but it said that the amount of unused commercial space in Chicago is the equivalent of 11 Willis Towers, meaning the old formerly known as the Sears Tower. Take 12 of those buildings, and that equates to the amount of unused space, I think, in the downtown area. Maybe it's broader than that, but I suspect it isn't. And when you think about that, it's something like 53% of commercial space is occupied, which tells you how many businesses have not come back, and I doubt are going to come back or anything, you know, in big enough numbers to make a difference. How do you reverse that trend? And I don't see any effort to make people, you know, expect that there will be a downtown area like we used to have, where you don't necessarily live downtown, but you work downtown. But to get there, you have to have some kind of transportation that is dependable and safe, and encourages people to put down roots and raise families and send their kids to the local schools and everything else. All of that stuff has just gone completely out the window when it comes to, you know, what the kind of decision making that the average person has to go through to decide where can I live and where can I be a success and prosper. And I don't see anybody in Chicago, from the city council up or down, taking any interest in this at all. And they expect it's going to be one gigantic welfare state eventually. You know, the more vacant office space you have, the more opportunities you have to fill it with people who just crossed into the border the other night. And those people, I don't think you can build a vibrant economy with just that, without any other kind of development plan that makes these people, you know, useful and educated and, you know, law-abiding and whatever else.
If we had all the trade schools still going like we did 30 years ago or 40 years ago, and if we had all the places like Pullman willing to hire people, 10,000 people every 6 months would be, you know, a pimple in the butt of an elephant. But I mean, now is not the time. it's like everything else, Jen. You can't just when you think you're at the end of your rope, that's when you get the flu, right? I mean, it's just, you know, timing is not always good for people, and this is not good timing for any of this stuff. But when is it good timing?
The arguing points there from Carl Denninger, you know, talks about his, you know, how we would never consider opening another business again because of Obamacare, you know, some of the things we're talking about. And I think, you know, if anybody were smart enough and, you know, wise enough to make good decisions to open a business, I would say it's Carl. I've never met him, but I listen to him every time he's on your show. But if he's not willing to do it, and I can believe that there's other people who are maybe just as hungry to open a business and, you know, would love to stay in the place they've grown up in and make a go of it, but they're blocked at every angle by, you know, over-regulation and, you know, this set aside.
I could talk about my business. How many people do you think it's cost the city? Now, I'm not going to go back to say instead of having electronic order delivery systems and things like that to trading floors, you know, go back to having people run around pieces of paper and runners. We're never going to go back there, and I don't think we should. But the idea that all the exchanges have become exclusionary instead of inclusive, where you can't even really make markets because some people get favorable feeds, some people don't, and you essentially went from 1,000 people, or maybe on all the trading floors, 4,000 people, to maybe, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people who work for these firms, but 20 firms doing all the market making, and I mean, the markets are horrendous, if you ask me. Of course, I'll argue with the regulators, good friends of mine, saying that they're straight, but they're horrible. They might be straight, but they're not good. I would say that the exchanges, when everybody, when it was inclusive on the floors and so forth, I think it was, Janet, it had to be 150,000 people in this part of the 125,000 people in the South Loop.
Absolutely, sure.
And we're probably down to what, 5, 10? And you know, all these buildings were full of people in that industry. Now, you're not going to have runners anymore. I get it. You're not going to have people doing the teledi-. What was the stuff the order came in off the tape? What they call that? What they call that? Was a tell us something something? Reorders just printed out, teletype, something like that. Anyway,
yeah.
You're not going to have that. But the idea that you can't have 500 people competing for markets. I'm not talking about in one place, but in all the places where at least if you're on the exchange floor, that you would get a feed equal to somebody who paid for it off the place. That if somebody wanted to go down there and trade and put his orders up electronically and just have him use that as his office, it would be a lot different than when I was there. But it doesn't mean that you should have nobody there because nobody wants anybody to compete with anybody and get a better price. The idea that you can trade between the bid and the offer and the stock stuff, that's all. That's crap. I'll say it right on national TV. I'd say it. That's crap. But I mean, this a lot of what has happened to these industries has also caused a lot of other damage. Meaning, you don't need any people downtown. Nobody buys lunch. Nobody buys dinner. You can't go to breakfast. I mean, it's the short-sightedness, and I just wonder how somebody who doesn't know the difference between a door lock and a fire alarm is going to get us out of. It's not whether the guy made a mistake or what his intention was. I have no idea what his intention was. But if he honestly didn't know the difference, I'm not so sure I want the guy in camera. I'm not so sure the guy wanted. I want the guy driving a cab, for God's sake. I mean, what are we doing here?
Well, to take the example of the Chinese lithium battery company, Gotion,
yeah,
in the Manteno plant. And it leads back into what you were saying about China earlier. If the Chinese had the kind of money that they supposedly have or had, they wouldn't need all these incentives from the state of Illinois to put a plant in Illinois. They clearly are doing it because they can't depend on whatever financing sources they had, given what's happening in China right now, because they're expecting money from the real estate industry to help fuel this. I think they can kiss that idea goodbye. But if you read the press release that Pritzker's office gave on this thing, I swear to him, the Chinese wrote the thing for him, and he just put a signature on it, if he ever even saw the thing. But it talks about this being a leap forward. And you and I are old enough to remember what the great leap forward was for China, went hand in glove with the Cultural Revolution.
Yeah.
Killed how many people?
And Tiananmen Square.
Here we've got, the promise of what, 2,600 jobs or whatever thing he's saying. There'll be highly skilled jobs, blah, 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 blah. Certainly Manteno, like a lot of other towns, could use something like that. But as we've seen with other investments like this, they're not permanent things, depending on what else happens. If Gotion goes bankrupt in, China because of what's happening in all their other, capital investments, who knows what else they're into, and they walk away from this thing, who's going to pick up the slack? What's going to happen to the bubble that's created when everybody flocks to Manteno to get a piece of this action, and there's nothing there, and you're not going to let somebody here do that on those kind of terms? I think there's a lot of, business entrepreneurs in Illinois would love to get a crack at that, and the Chinese just waltz right in, and God knows what we've promised, was promised by somebody else on our behalf to get them here. It absolutely infuriates me. And this is like something he puts on his resume, Pritzker. This is something good he did for Illinois. I don't buy it.
Well, Jen, you have to. You don't have to, but you might want to check out the whole landscape. I mean, you've heard me rail constantly that if the game is. Nothing's ever going to be totally fair. We get that. We're adults. But if it's reasonably fair, people should go to the capital markets. They should pay people for the use of their money, for their idea. The idea is to build a plant, and you do that. And I think you're always going to get some semblance of help from government. If there's going to be 2,600 people working on what used to be a farm, maybe they'll throw you a bone and put a exit from the expressway there. We would hope, you know. I hope they're gonna pony up a stoplight or two, so people can pull into the place when 2,000 cars come out of the joint. I mean, there's infrastructure stuff that the state sort of owes you, that they would owe anybody. But part of this, and I think what, you know, and I don't like the deal probably any more than you do, but I think, and I'm no fan of Pritzker's, but I would bet that for him to get that this year, he had to go far and above the deal the guy in Texas was willing to do, the guy in Iowa was willing to do. Look what they just gave these people in Wisconsin. They never even built a damn place. We gave in Illinois, I think we gave, I don't know, Greg, I don't know if you can check this, I think we gave either Caterpillar or Peoria, Caterpillar or John Deere, some of the state taxes that the people in the plant pay, I think, go back to the company. State income tax. If I could do anything, I know states, you know, a lot of you right-wing sort of dudes like the states' rights stuff. I don't think a state should ever be able to compete with people from another, you know, for business or whatever you want to call it, by lowering the tax rate to somebody that somebody else has to pay more. I don't honestly, even though I don't think he was the world's nicest guy, I doubt very seriously if you could have walked up to Caesar and said, we'll do this, but by the way, everybody's paying 20%, we only want to pay 10%, and he goes, okay. I don't see how that ever works over the long term. Do you? I mean, and yet...
No, that's the thing, Tom. I can't speak for what kind of, you know, incentives were really on the table or what kind of preference this place got for getting the deal at all. I suspect it goes far deeper and higher than you and I suspect, and it could be, you know, promise that's been on the table for a long time, or somebody here owns a piece of that business too, and it could
well,
be
Pritzker with
Pritzker,
it's always it's always the thought in your mind that is his hands in the pocket.
And how can you think otherwise, Tom?
Well,
really,
but I mean, I'm going to say though, Jan, and one of my clients, Yiddish persuasion, not that it makes any difference, was really in tight with the people up in Minnesota when they lost the North Stars, right? What was the hockey team? Was the North Stars? Yeah, because now they're the Dallas Stars. They're not North anymore, right? They tried to put the handle on, you know, put the squeeze on the city, and the mayor said, bleep you. And then years later, people are bitching a blue streak about we don't have a hockey team. And my friend who knows these people and knows the government up there very well said they could have kept the first team for like, I don't know, $2 million or something of you know, pay money. And it cost them like 15 or something or 20 or 100 to build a stadium for the new team because people clamored for the new team. And I'm going to say that somewhere in I think it was Rauner's administration, I think, John, you know, that big, huge plant that never got built, Kenosha, 90 bazillion jobs. The state of Wisconsin basically bent over and pulled their drawers down for these guys. I don't think they ever built the place. If they did, it's going to be way less than the size of it. And I'm sure Pritzker said, if ever one of those places is in play again, we're not going to lose it. Because people were giving Rauner no end of crap that he lost it. Why didn't we get it instead of Wisconsin, if you recall?
Yeah.
So there's reasons why these guys do these things. I mean, Pritzker, I'll tell you what, a guy probably knows finance. He probably thinks it's a crummy deal too. But he can't keep losing to every state. I mean, we just had the state of Texas implore. Who do you say he wanted to do? He was going to take all the exchanges down there if they tried to put any kind of a tax up here. Or what was it? He just said, what business did he try to entice by saying he was going to be? It was what was left of the SIBO or the Board of Trade, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
This kind of entrepreneurship by governments, somehow it's got to stop, in my opinion. Anyway, S&P futures down 8 and NASDAQ futures down 7. These are up way bunch last night. John, you want to hang through? Audrey's coming in. She was hoping you'd hang
out. I'll hang out, sure.
All right, we'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Greg Pappas in studio, John Flanagan, and soon to be Audrey on the line. And we also have Matt Byrne on the doing a good job on the board and looking stuff up for us. He had some great music.
Thank you.
S&P Futures, this is astounding. I was at my brother's last night for dinner. As soon as the market opened up, like Greg was saying, what happened to our wowie? We were up 25 spoos, Greg, or something. And we had to be.
Yeah, we were up 0.5%.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, not so much. Bill Ackman says the economy is starting to slow. How does this guy get on TV? I mean, talk his book. Whatever. Dow futures down 68. Over in Europe, we've got wow, look at this, Greg. They were unchanged an hour ago. Now the DAX down 48.3%. FTSE down 40.5%. CAC around down 26.4%. Weren't they all like unchanged an hour ago?
I don't know if they're down 50%.
No, 0.5%.
Yeah.
What did I say? 50. Sorry. On Friday, the Dow was down 158, S&P down 11, NASDAQ up 18, so kind of mixed but slightly down. Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 97.3%. We've got the Hang Seng in Shanghai closed. We've got bonds up 7 basis points, 4.64, relentless here to the upside. Bond up 3 basis points, 2.87. So, Greg, how are those bonds doing that you bought at a minus 1.5 interest rate? Are they trading about 40 cents on the buck?
Oops.
It's okay. I bought them for the government, not for me, right? As long as it's somebody else's money, it's okay. Japan at 0.78, as high as we've seen that. Oil up, not as up as much. Only up 54 cents, 91.33. Went up 73 cents, 92.93. Natural gas down a penny, 291. RBOB up 3 cents, 243. This gold, ouch, on $14, 1851. Down like, you know, 100 bucks in the last 2 weeks. Silver down 59 cents, 21.86. Copper down 5 cents, 3.68. Silver was up 75 cents on Friday in the opening, Greg. You weren't here. And by the time, when we were doing the show, by 10 o'clock it was down 40 cents. It had hit like almost a 5% move in the first hour of trading. It was the dollar just raced up on Friday. Crypto, Bitcoin, huge rally up 1,200 bucks, 28,320. And the U.S. dollar, as you could probably guess by these other ones, is marching up as the pound is down to 121.6 and the euro dollar down to euro down to 105. They were 108.5 and 128 for a long time, so that's about 3-4% move in each one, right, Greg? Which is a big deal. Now, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports all suck.
Definitely. Yeah, good morning.
Wait till next year.
Yeah, that's the thing. You got to wait till next year for them to be for the Bears to be good. But that was
Bears
what we said last year.
Bears got the number one pick we're worried about now. We don't want to win.
I guess so, yeah. That's the strategy is lose. It is currently 7:40 a.m. on October 2nd, 2023. Traffic inbound on the Kennedy exit ramp closed at Kimball Avenue. That's exit 45B. The ramp is scheduled to open up in 2 weeks on October 16th. Weather in Chicago, 64 degrees currently with a high of 84 today. Humidity at 90%. Clear skies downtown. Tomorrow, lots of sun, high of 85. Temperatures to dip by the end of the week, so take in the warm weather while you can. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, clear skies, 67 degrees currently, a high of 86. Sunny skies expected throughout the week. In the MLB yesterday, Cubs lost to Milwaukee 4-0. White Sox lost as well 2-1 against San Diego. And of course, with the Bears yesterday, very embarrassing loss to the Denver Broncos. Bears held out with 28-14 by the end of the third quarter, but gave away 17 points in the fourth. Final score 31-28, which marks their fourth loss this season and the 14th game in a row, including last season. Not the best stuff, Chief. Back to you.
What's the longest losing streak ever in the NFL?
I don't know. You tell me.
Greg, John, Audrey.
Would have to be the Bears.
The Lions.
No. I'll give you a clue. It was a Chicago team.
Oh God.
Chicago the Cardinals. They lost 26 in a row, 1941, 42, and 43. I didn't even think they had teams during the war, but evidently they did. They lost 26.
Something to aspire to.
Yeah, they like 26 or 29 in a row they lost.
Wow, yeah.
Tampa
or maybe the Bucks, yeah.
Bucks were like 16, right?
They were horrible.
Well, they lost the whole first year, which was 14, and they lost a couple more in the next year. Bears are getting close, though. Da Bears.
Close to what?
Close to a new
the cliff.
Never count them out, Tom.
See, if you see Nancy, you got to talk her off the cliff because Nancy's a huge Bear fan. I just say that.
I did talk to her, and she said she's just not going to get upset about it anymore. There's nothing she can do about it.
Which means she, read between the lines, she's very upset about it.
Well, she's like, there's nothing to do. I can't get upset. It's just the year is already lost.
She's
so
got
there you go. Another
fan.
Oh,
I found Tampa. 76-77. They lost 26 games.
Really? So when I talk to her, I have to turn her focus around that they're now looking for the number one draft pick and losing's okay. Just saying. Hey, well, we're
only up. It's only up from here.
Yes, it's. When Audrey was just on the trading floor, she knew the old saying: "We're down so low, it's starting to look like up."
Absolutely.
God, they did have some pretty good sayings on the trading floor, I'll say. So, Ed, we were talking about the development, like going around your place. I'm sure you noticed, and John, that the actual real estate prices in Chicago actually snuck up a little bit last month, not very much. But we have not seen, even with the rates up this high, we haven't seen the kind of the restriction in supply that's caused the prices to not come down. It hasn't happened yet. It doesn't look like it's going to happen for at least in some areas. Does it? I mean, I don't see a flotilla of houses for sale. Do you?
No, but it was an interesting statistic, and it was very very interesting to watch it happening. As a realtor in our boards, we have statistics that pop up every day, and it tells us how many deals are pending, how many new listings came up for our are the, I'm in the Northern Illinois MLS system, which encounter goes to like the Wisconsin line south over a little bit. So kind of the bigger metropolitan area. And it was very gangbusters until June. We had a little lull in the action. And then all of a sudden it just really started to pick up in towards the end of August. And at that point in time, more listings started coming on, selling as fast as they got them. And our latest stats are that we are currently at a 9-month high for listings right now, which isn't saying a lot, but there was a noticeable amount coming on if you tracked it every day. If any agent has buyers, we track every day because you're always searching for your client's possible new home. And you could tell the difference in what was coming up and then all of a sudden the amount of deals being put together. So right now, we're seeing the result of that. But all of a sudden, I've noticed in the last 4 or 5 days, there's been less. So this is going to be, again, an interesting phenomenon. I think it'll be busy. If the weather stays nice and inventory comes on, I see October, November being really, really good months. And then we'll see. Sometimes it's dependent on the weather. Once it gets to be 30 below and 2 feet of howling winds out there of snow and whatnot, then obviously people are going to go, oh, maybe not today.
What people don't know is Audrey's side job is writing the weather forecast for the Farmer's Almanac. Just saying.
I have to do that.
But is the market, I'm trying to find a term here. It seems odd to somebody who just looks at numbers like me, although there's no doubt that what you're saying is absolutely true because I see you doing it, for God's sake. You would think that if interest rates ran from 3.5 to 7.5, in a normal world, there would be some comeback in prices. But clearly, because of the maybe not so much construction during COVID, people moving out of some areas and other areas being more. I mean, I can't even imagine what the prices are in some of the bad neighborhoods in Chicago that everybody's leaving. And who knows where those prices are, or if they can even give the place away. But how tender do you think the market is? If all of a sudden, fortunately, where you are and most of the city of Chicago isn't, it's not like we're a one company town where you're going to get 50 people laid off and 50 houses have a for sale sign on them the next day. I mean, thank God Chicago's never been like that. How tender is it? If all of a sudden 100 people got laid off, there was 100 houses for sale, would you see the houses with the prices crack? Or I mean, are you worried about it at this point, I guess is my question.
No, at this point in time, I'm not. You had to spend the weekend with me when I was negotiating a multiple offer situation trying to buy a place for my client. There simply are none, and people who have not bought a house in quite a while cannot grasp the reality of when you're trying to buy a house that all of a sudden you're competing for it, and even though you're giving somebody full price, you still don't get it, and you have to decide if you want to give other concessions to make it happen. So we're still in that bottleneck. There's still more buyers than sellers, and that's all there is to it right now.
Yeah, so Jan, instead of being able to take Odd out for a nice breakfast, she's negotiating this thing all day long, and then I usually take the little pooch out for a walk, but it was 90-some degrees, and I don't want to kill the little thing. So my fallback position was to watch the Bears from end to end. How'd that work out? I wouldn't wish that.
It was a bad
afternoon. Why? And then I thought, well, at least I get to see them win here. Then they lose. God, I didn't want it to put the Cubs on. I'm like, that would. Anyway, thank God the sports are over. But I'm really stunned that these prices have hung in there like this. I just hope it's not going to be some wacky thing where people all of a sudden start getting laid off. But right now, you got more people that are looking for houses than you're getting listings, right?
Yeah, and that's and it always seems to be in this industry one way or another a leading, but it's just been a dramatic amount of buyers since March of 2020. It's just been everybody particularly wants a house with a yard and green space, and so it's very interesting. But yeah, right now it is definitely still a seller's market, especially if you've got a nice house in where people want to be. And it's challenging, to say the least. It's challenging for everybody. It's difficult for an agent on both sides. But it's very hard if you're competing for something. It's hard if you're the listing agent and you all of a sudden might have 10 or 20 offers at a house, and you have to help the seller sort through them, choose which one it is, that there's only one happy person when the dust settles. So it's a very hard market, and it's hard for people to understand where they're participating in it, whether you're on the good side or the bad side, depending how you look at it, what's happening. It's an unusual phenomenon that, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and I've seen a lot of different markets, but this is a very, very, very different time.
Well, you know, the thing that is, John, I'll explain it to you, and hopefully in a way that the listeners understand it. If I could, I'm not going to generalize for you, Odd, because I never ever look at any of the stuff that she's doing, because that's her business, and the last thing she needs is me bumping into it, screwing it up. It seems that the people that are competing for these homes are, it's like almost a, there's only a few homes out there, which we've said a few times, but it's a small subset of the population, it seems to me, and feel free to disagree. It's people that have bought a home someplace, you know, be it Southside, whatever. They worked for 20 years, a married couple, whatever, pretty much have paid the damn place off. So if they sell it for, even if it's 300 grand, they're piling out with 300 grand. You know, maybe it's 350 and they've got a $50,000 mortgage left. So we're talking some pretty cash-rich people that are now moving to a different place. Say they're paying 400, four and a quarter. They either are paying cash, or the loan is low enough to where, even though 7.5 versus 3.5 is an irritant, it's not a deal breaker. I don't really see you lately, and again, I don't ask to look at your book. I don't really see you lately with a lot of people piling out of apartment and all of a sudden putting down this $90,000 and paying 7.5 on 360. I haven't noticed you with a buyer like that in a long time. I mean, it seems like you're dealing with a very busy part of 10% of the population. If that's a, John, did I say that right? I mean, is it?
Yeah, I can.
Am I right? I mean, I want to say,
well,
5 years ago.
I've had both. And what's interesting is I've had a lot of first time buyers this year, and a lot of them are two income couples that they're each working, and they're buying their first, save some money, and they're buying their first house. What is missing in the, and to your point, you're right about my clients. So I'm getting a lot of the boomer population that are, if not downsizing. What's different about the boomers nowadays than our parents is they might not want the big 4,000 or 5,000 square foot house anymore, but they want all the luxuries of the big house in a different package, in a very upscale townhome, upscale ranch home. So they still want size. They don't want to give up a lot. So that's the type of market that we're dealing with. A different type of person, you're right, with is coming to the table with some money, and they want what they want. So I have the first-time buyer who wants what they want, and is coming in with some substantial money. But what's missing, and this is the interesting part of the puzzle, is the turnover market in the middle. And that's what's made the stop, has the stop gap here. Excuse me, Abby, stop. That was the poodle's opinion. That middle market has stopped everything. So the people that would be moving from what was the 250 house to the 400 house has decided, we're just going to sit here in our 250 house and with our 3.5% mortgage and see what happens. And the 400 people are going to do the same. They're not moving to the 600 or 800. So that whole middle market that has their house is not seem to be turning up again. They're not moving up to the next aspirational level right now.
Well, no way.
Know,
somebody.
John, what do you think?
Go ahead, John.
That's what I imagined it is happening. And you know, if in your experience, Audrey, for example, how many deals that you see close involve multiple offers or places closing at over the listing price these days?
I would say 80% of my deals this year.
Yeah, that would show that, you know, the money is, you know, the competitive bidding is for the upper end of people who, you know, are perfectly willing to spend more than what the house may be worth today, or what is, you know, what the seller's asking for. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's a bubble, but it just means that that's money that's somehow not going in else to other pricing levels in the market too. So,
well, you're totally missing, I think, if I could read between what Audrey was saying, you're totally missing the family that has the 3.5% $1,800 a month mortgage, has another kid, needs another bedroom and bathroom. There's no way they can sell their house and bump up 50 grand for another house if the new mortgage is 7.5%. That whole group is gone, right, Ud?
Yeah, I think they're just going to sit there and see what happens, and they're going to fix either, or they're going to put an addition on. One of my best friend's nephew, he actually is a Chicago policeman, God bless him, and instead of moving, because obviously they have to stay in the city, they're going to put a second story on their house, because they are very, very family that takes, you know, saves their money. They've probably got more than half their house paid off already. He's going to just invest in that, stay there, and he says, I'm not going to move right now. So it's interesting, because again, the prices would be astronomical. It's going to be way cheaper for him, because they also have a lot of carpenters in the family to put that on, than it is to go ahead and upgrade to what he needs. So it would be twice as much, basically. You're going to have to pay another $100, $150 to get what you want, and then you're going to double your interest.
Which so he could easily do. Sense. He could easily do the 100 if the rates were the same.
Right.
Because, I mean, in the midst of, you know, you've been able to zero in on this, but how many real estate people are out of a job?
A lot of people. I think, like anything else, it depends where your market is, too.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and it's, again, this business, if you survive it, it has an incredible amount of highs or lows. And it's not for the faint of heart either way. But it's just, it's a very interesting and challenging time, because I have to tell you, it's hard. People see all this going on, and they think real estate agents have it easy, and it's probably, you know, obviously you could make money, but it's one of the most challenging times I've been in the business.
Well, you're half psychologist.
Audrey,
go ahead, John.
Have you seen deals, Audrey, where in bidding the price up, you know, over the listing price, where the eventual, you know, price butts up against the appraised value? And where the thing isn't going to appraise out at what it actually sold for, and that makes people retreat or kills the deal. Have you seen any situations?
Well,
like that?
It's funny you say that, because yes, and to your, but you know what? Not as much as you think. I've only had it happen on one deal this year. And when that does happen, that buyer and seller have the choice of negotiating the difference. Let's just say there's a $20,000 difference. Deciding if they want to split it half and half. If the seller says, I'm not giving you any concessions. If you want the house, you got to pay up to 20. Or the buyer saying, forget it, I'll wait till the next house. But it is what's been a phenomenon again in this whole thing is people literally waiving the appraisal to get the house, to give them an edge on the negotiation.
Really?
Yes. So all of a sudden, and then they agreed that when they get to the table, if there's any difference, they will pay the entire amount of the difference themselves, in, you know, from what they could get the mortgage from to what the buy point was. And I've had that happen twice a year. The people say, no, we want the house, we'll make up the difference.
Well, that has to, if you look at it economically, I'll just be brief with this, that's actually my niece helps people out with a lot of closings. My nephew said, how the hell why would anybody do that? And I said, well,
Tim, that's how look how high the prices have gone up in the last several years. The reason why they go up, that's what's kind of screwy about the business. Sorry, Odd, is if all the houses are worth $350, and I decide, look, these prices are going up, the Fed does, whatever the reasons are, and I all of a sudden want to pay $375, it's going to come back as an appraisal of $350. But I say, screw it, I'm ponying up the other $25,000 because I think these prices are moving up, and now all of a sudden that becomes the appraised price, right? It's $375. But
it will show that in the final thing that the buyer on the settlement forms, the buyer brought that much to the closing.
But in the last 3 years, the COVID years, 4 years, houses have gone from $350 to $500, and they did that because people paid over the appraised price, right?
No, not all of that.
What I'm saying,
and some of it. Most, I mean, all I can speak for is myself, and I've only had two deals when there was a price difference, and it honestly wasn't very much. I mean, it wasn't something that people would have walked from. But the point, what's the difference is that people need a place to live, and when they finally get the chance to get it, there's nothing to rent. I mean, there's nothing to rent. I've had a client who was thinking about renting instead of buying for a while, and I looked in 8 suburbs, and for a 3-bedroom, bath and a half house with at least a 1-car garage, there were 3 listings of 3 rentals available in Mar system.
But to be honest, and again, I say I don't get into her business, but then I do have ears. This particular place you're talking about this weekend, the listing price, the first thing you told me was this is going to go over list, because you had 4 or 5 comps that were frame that went higher than this thing, and it's brick, and it's the same house. So you knew right away that it was underpriced, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, to answer your question, Jen, a lot of time, I mean, if it was overpriced, you're not going to get a bidding war. I mean, you're around enough to where it's like me looking at a stock going, I wouldn't pay that. It's the same thing. This is your business, right? So you knew right away this one was not going to go with the listing price. It was going to go higher, right?
Yeah. Well, here's the funny thing, and John will, I speak to this too. If it is moving ready, if it's pretty and it's moving ready, there's your bidding war. People are still turning their noses up at the houses that need work, the houses that need attention. I mean, and some of those, if you're willing to do that, you could still get something at a recent price that have been sitting, because if they're dated, you know, grandma and grandpa's house, not ever, but, you know, well-maintained but still old, people don't want that. They want to slide right in. So it's 2 different segments of the market. Again, it's very interesting what's going on.
Well, I tell you what, if you're, we got a dash here, but if it's me and I got the wife and 3 kids and I'm paying $500,000 for a place, the last thing I want to do is be chewing on plaster dust for the first 6 months. Just saying. God, can you imagine how miserable that was? John, I remodeled probably 5 places when I didn't live in there. I was still living at home, which was great. I mean, I was working in the houses all weekend. First time I remodeled one that I was in, I go, never again. And I didn't have any wife and kids. Every time I put my suit on, it was all full of plaster dust. No matter how you try to keep it, anyway, you don't want to do that. John, thank you very much. Audrey, great as usual. Yep. What happened to our market here, guys? We're down 11 and the Spoos 20. We were up 25 last night on the Spoos. We're down 30-some points. Ouch.
It's October.
Go, God. Don't throw that jinx out at us, but you just did. But back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain?
schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
That was the grossest thing I've ever heard in my life.